On the food safety, it wasn't clear in the budget document I saw that we were talking about all 15. Are we talking about all 15 agencies that have some responsibility, or just the two major players?
What the president is asking for, Ellen, is the ability to reorganize. Many presidents have had this capacity to reorganize within the federal government. Once he has that authority, it would be his intention to create a single food safety agency, which would allow us to take a look at all 15 agencies. Obviously, the primary focus would be on the two major agencies, but the bottom line is we want to make sure that we have as effective and as efficient system as possible that reduces the opportunity for the right hand not knowing what the left hand knows about a particular incident or situation.
Are you in support, Mr. Secretary?
You guys, you know, the two people on the end that raised their hand are very polite.
Sure.
You guys, so I'm going to respond to the polite people at the end of them.
I know you did propose a food safety agency in 2009. It was right after you started. Can you talk a little bit of what's happened since then? I mean, we're now like almost 6 years later. And also sort of the reality of that, of if they really did take FSIS and put it in HHS, obviously it's a pretty ingrained system that a lot of people have been working within for a long time. Do you think that could create more problems of trying to shift something that's been
I think it has for so long. Yeah, I think it would have been far more difficult 6 years ago because at the time I suggested it, we were faced with a situation where our approach here at USDA to food safety was much different than what the FDA's approach was. Ours was more of a prevention and then mitigation. FDA's was more of a mitigation approach. With the passage of the Food Safety Modernization Act, I think you now see consistency in terms of approaches to food safety, which is that we want to try to prevent it if we can, and if it occurs, we want to mitigate it when it does occur. I think that makes it, I think it makes it easier, if you will, to combine systems. You know, obviously, the focus here needs to be on making sure that we have the most efficient and effective system. We still have quite a few Americans that are submitted to and subjected to food safety, foodborne illnesses. Some estimate as high as 45 million. 130,000 are hospitalized, 3,000 die. Until we get those numbers to zero, we still have work to do. And I have seen throughout the course of the last 6 years circumstances and situations where we have done a better job of coordination. But it would eliminate the possibility that we know something that FDA doesn't know, or that they know something that we don't know, or the delay in each of us knowing what each knows would be eliminated with the development of a single food safety agency. You know, I think it's going to be important for people to understand that the combination of these doesn't necessarily mean that you would change the method of inspection. It just provides for better coordination, and it certainly provides for less administrative overhead. That's where you get a budget savings, so you get a more effective and efficient system, and you get savings at the same time. And I think the president is using this as an example of what could occur if this president, were given the power to reorganize as many previous presidents have had. He does not currently have that power, and I think he wanted to give Congress a sense of his willingness to look at things that before may have been off the table.
I feel like I've seen a few different numbers for the agriculture and food research
I think AFRI's 456 million.
I was hoping you could talk about, you said that for the crop insurance program is about 8.2 billion, and just talk about that in comparison to previous years.
It would be less. The effort here, when Congress passed the Farm Bill, one of the challenges of passing the Farm Bill was to create sufficient savings to satisfy everyone that that we were going to, over the time, spend less money. It was anticipated that we would spend a significant amount on crop insurance, but that we would spend less on other safety net programs compared to direct payments. Now, with crop prices and commodity prices coming down rather precipitously in the last 12 months, it's anticipated that we're actually potentially going to have to spend a lot more on ARC and PLC. So if you want to stay within, generally within the budget savings that have been identified for that safety net, you have to make some adjustments. Now, we have proposed some adjustments in the past in crop insurance, ranging from a reasonable rate of return at 12%, some changes to the administration operating expense allotment. What we're doing here is responding to an OIG audit that essentially said that our preventive planning payments could be adjusted a bit, and also taking a look at the harvest price loss coverage, which has received some criticism in terms of the level of subsidy. In many cases, and the opportunity that it creates for a fairly significant payout. So you essentially combine the two, higher payouts for ARC, slightly less payouts for crop insurance, and you end up with pretty much in the same ballpark as what the farm bill proposed.
Okay, following on that, forecasts, the 10-year baseline for commodity prices over the next decade are significantly lower than they were when the farm bill was passed. CBO projections out, and they're expecting higher expenses when the farm bill was passed. You know, you're seeing government bodies now saying, multi-year, this could become more expensive. Is this something that is a concern to you? Do you believe that commodity program payouts, the PLC or ARC, will be significantly larger over the next 10 years under the farm bill?
You know, I'm not really comfortable going out 10 years. I know that people can project that. I'm taking a look at the next 12 to 18 months, and what we see is clearly the possibility that payouts could be $1 billion to $1.5 billion higher than anticipated. But that's the point. The point of having a safety net is when prices come down to a point where they are at or below the sort of break-even point, you don't want the folks having to lose the farm. That's what a safety net is for. Safety net is for circumstances like this. So it's you know, it's acting the way it's supposed to. And prices go down because we had a good harvest, and so did a lot of other folks around the world. So I would anticipate and expect that there'll be some planning adjustments from time to time over the course of the next 10 years, but what they will be, you know, you'll have to tell me what the weather's going to be like, and that's certainly varied. You're going to have to tell me what happens in other parts of the world. I think there's always going to be demand for U.S. product, and we're always going to be able to produce it, but there are going to be times when it's going to be economically difficult for folks, and that's why you have a safety net.
I'd like to propose we can jump CFC-1, given the administration on conservation, if you want to call them.
We're still adding 20 million acres to the program, and we're continuing to look for creative ways to leverage the resources within the conservation programs, Philip. So I think at the end of the day, we're going to do more conservation. It doesn't necessarily always have to be solely with federal money. It can be through the RCPP program. We're seeing at least a doubling in our first go-round of 115 projects. At least a doubling, if not more, a match, if you will. So I think you're going to continue to see us add acres to what is already a record level of conservation.
Secretary, arguably, USDA has as much of a tradition in safety as FDA. Why not put the Single Food Agency here instead of FDA?
I think it's obviously, people are going to have opinions about this one way or the other, but at the end of the day, FDA represents 80% of food products. We represent 20%. And I don't, again, it's not about tradition. It's not about turf. I think people have to get over that. It's about food safety. It's about efficient and effective food safety. The reality is it's pretty hard to explain why we're one of the few, if not the only, industrialized nation in the world that has multiple food safety agencies. And I don't think this is going to impact negatively our efforts in food safety. I think it's going to improve our efforts in food safety, as we'll eliminate the ability of one agency of government not knowing what another agency knows or taking time for those agencies to communicate with one another, and during that period of time, you may have additional problems. So it eliminates that, which is why it's more efficient. And obviously, it's less costly because you don't have duplication of various administrative staff.
Is it going to move food stamps and programs to FDA and
go in? Not necessarily. I'm not sure what the parallel is. To me, it's not.
HHS has social welfare. Arguably, long-term recipients of food stamps are social welfare.
I don't know that that's necessarily the case. It's certainly not the situation involving, I mean, the food safety issues. Now that we have alignment with, it's the same responsibility, okay? It's the same responsibility of food safety. When you talk about SNAP and you talk about TANF and you talk about some of the other programs, that's in the rubric of human services, but it's not the same. They're not doing the same job we're doing. So I don't think you can draw that parallel. Bill?
Yeah, it's just that FSIS has a much better reputation for food safety. Shouldn't it all come here? FSIS is sort of the model for...
to me, personally, I think you get too wrapped up in the turf issue here. That's not the point. The point is you're going to have a better food safety system. Now, if FSIS has a better system, and I don't know whether people would agree with that or not, then obviously they'll have an impact on what transpires in a single food safety agency. Maybe one of the reasons why if they did indeed have a better track record, it's because of the focus on prevention and mitigation, which now FDA has because of the Food Safety Modernization Act. It took this long to sort of align philosophies. Gary.
Yes. Along the same line, I've heard concerns expressed that if you put these two together, what it will amount to is the non-meat portion of food safety trying to get more of the budget that has gone to meat inspection. Because the rest has traditionally been underfunded.
Well, I think a single food agency would probably be pretty forceful in terms of being able to get sufficient resources. And at the end of the day, this is absolutely going to result in. Well, let me put it this way. I think you all are asking questions in the old way of thinking. A new way of thinking. You're all focused on turf. You're all focused on whose jurisdiction it is. At the end of the day, we're focused on food safety. We're focused on making sure people have safer food. We have a very safe system today. If you think of it in the context of the number of meals that are served and the number of portions in each meal that are served, but there's still, until we get these numbers to zero, there's still work to be done. And when you have a system today where you've got different agencies involved, there is the chance, and it occurs from time to time, where one agency has facts and information that the other agency should know, and it takes time for that to be communicated. And that oftentimes delays action that might result in a better outcome. With a single food safety issue, you do not have that. You have one agency, one level of accountability, one set of one entity responsible. So you're going to have a much more efficient system. You're not going to have that delay. And that is where the focus needs to be. And, you know, everyone's going to get caught up in this town with whether it should be here or there. At the end of the day, this is about safer. Chris, you finally figured out how to put your hand.
My apologies. I forgot about middle school.
Hey.
I want to follow up on Alan's question. I know you explained it earlier. Is the ultimate goal under this organization, if you will, to do all 15, or is that still being worked out? I know, obviously, FDA and USDF remain two on this project.
Well, I'll try to answer it, but I don't know that I can give a better answer than I've already given, which is that you start with the premise that the president would like to have reorganization authority. Were he to get that, he's now giving you examples of what he would do with that authority. And one example is a single food safety agency. Now, over the course of the discussion and debate about this, it may very well be that there is a trade component that's in some other agency that may or may not make sense for it to be food safety agency. I don't know that we've gone into that level of detail, because the president simply wants to have Congress give him the authority and wants to give them a sense of what that authority could do. In this particular case, it would result in a safer and better food safety system. Let's see, everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does that specific amount being put aside for climate have something?
I'm sorry, what?
Is there a specific amount being put aside?
No. But within the existing budgets, resources will be directed to ensure that the climate hubs can do their job. We'd anticipate and expect this year that the climate hubs would complete the assessments that they've been doing of the various risks associated with climate change, and begin identifying the technologies and techniques that need to be disseminated through extension and through education to prepare producers with making the decisions and taking the steps necessary. So they will be adequately supported. I don't think you necessarily have to have a specific line item, because it's inherent in the Forest Service budget, NRCS's budget, and ARS's budget. Go down the line here, Alan.
Going back to the safety agency, so we're in a new world and we have one agency and it's all focused on nothing but having the best food safety possible and everything. Getting to Jerry's question about resources, you've already heard a little bit of discussion about the pros and cons of having it located within pretty large HHS agency versus being standalone. You can have one entity, but it can either be its own thing or it can be part of HHS. Was there ever a discussion of having, like the DeLauro and Durbinville, having an independent standalone food safety agency versus having it in HHS? And what was the reasoning for having it in HHS rather than standalone?
There hasn't been an extended discussion, but I think the purpose of this is to begin the discussion and to begin the debate, and to get people focused on the fact that we have a system today that no one can contend is as effective and as efficient as it needs to be when you've got 15 different agencies having involvement.
So would you rule out DeLauro and Durbin's idea of a standalone?
Listen, this is ultimately Congress's decision to give the president reorganization authority. If they give the president reorganization authority, they have a sense of the direction he will go. If Congress decides to take up the DeLauro-Durbin bill, I'm sure we will work with them, but you know, the point of this is to get this on the table so that people can start having these conversations. Bill?
I want to follow up on that just to be clear, because the language says descriptions of this agency would be independent from FDA and primary responsibility. Supposed to be a standalone agency. I want to follow up.
It's kind of hard to. It's standalone in the sense that it's not going to be a separate department of government, right? It's going to be under the rubric of Health and Human Service. Does that answer?
But FDA is not. The FDA would. And FDA.
Or it would be FDA.
It could be that, you know.
Thanks for the acronym right now.
Okay, without
or would it be a separate agency within agency?
You know what, you guys, I tell you what, I'm going to leave. You guys debate this when I come back. You know what the answer is. The point of this is to put this on the table so people start asking these questions. I don't know that anybody necessarily has all of the answers. But right now, the president doesn't have authority to reorganize the federal government in a way that would require and result in more effective and efficient food safety. He's asking for that authority. If he's given it, he will exercise it to try to bring greater efficiency and effectiveness to food safety.
That's the rest of my question in terms of these things, because there are different authorities, the FSI and the FDA, like with performance standards.
Right.
Would you be asking Congress?
We would be asking Congress to work with us to provide for the time, that would allow for an orderly transition, and having all of these detailed questions that you folks are asking today fully and completely answered. I think it's fair to say that they have not been fully, but then they won't be. The point of this is to say this is an authority the president needs and wants, and here's what he would do with it. Congress provide him that authority as they've provided other presidents. Or in the alternative, if they don't like that, will they proceed to promote the DeLauro-Durbin approach? The bottom line is we've got 15 different agencies involved in food safety, and I don't know, there may be another industrialized nation that's got that many, but I don't think there is. And I know from 6 years, now going on 7 years of experience in this space, there are times when there is a delay because one department doesn't know what the other knows, and it takes time to communicate. With one agency, you wouldn't have that delay. I'm going down the line, then we'll go around here.
I know that most of the budget for USDA is mandatory, so I was wondering what the number is associated with total for mandatory spending.
146. It's in the
131.
Okay, thanks. 156. Total 131 and 25. This is a question about, so there's another proposal for taking some of the rural business programs and merging them with these other sort of business and trade authorities and other departments. Where would that eventually be housed? What department would have oversight of that?
I don't know the answer to that question. This is a proposal that's been submitted before as an example of what the president could do. I don't know.
Okay, so let me just follow up again on food safety, since that's a popular topic. Are you essentially saying this is the proposal we as the administration are putting out here for authority? It's left to Congress to kind of debate among themselves as to what kind of details they might want, and maybe give the administration some sort of guidance in addition to the authority if it goes along with this idea.
I think it's two things. One, it's will the president have the reorganization authority that other presidents have had? Now, Congress could grant that, and the president could then use it and do a number of things. Secondly, Congress may want to weigh in, since we already have two members of Congress that have submitted their own individual proposal. They may want to weigh in on precisely if it were to be reorganized, how it would be reorganized. I think this is a conversation which obviously will involve and should involve Congress. The beauty of this is it puts it on the table and it brings to the forefront the need to start asking these questions and answering them. That's the purpose of this.
Something completely different. You mentioned a couple of things that the administration...
You always take me off my game, Professor. Go ahead.
You mentioned a couple of things the administration wants to spend money on child nutrition programs. Authorized child nutrition programs this year. Are there reforms the administration would like to see? What is a child nutrition program? Perhaps you could respond to the chairman of the Senate Ag Committee that a lot of rural schools that can't use school lunch guidelines.
Well, I'm going to save for a later date the answer to your first question. But I will try to respond to your second question, which I think is probably more relevant today to the budget. First of all, I think that, I thought about this. Over 90% of school districts have basically worked to get certified in the new system. Surveys that I've seen show a significant majority of young people actually like the new meals. And another survey I've seen indicates that in terms of food waste, it's no greater than it was before the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. And I've seen some additional information to suggest that we're beginning to see progress in terms of getting a handle on the obesity and hunger issue in this country. I don't doubt that there are school districts in rural areas with potentially declining populations, student populations, that feel that it may be difficult for them to do what they want to do and they would like to do, which is to comply with these standards, which is why we established the Team Up effort. We worked with the University of Mississippi and their Nutrition Center. We asked the University of Mississippi to help us identify school districts that were in that situation, team them up with a mentoring school district in a similar circumstance that had figured a way to get it done, and provide some intensive training for a day and a half on strategies to enable districts to meet the new standards. In addition, there is obviously additional reimbursement that has gone along with getting certified, which is helping to defray the cost. And we continue to encourage Congress to fully fund our school equipment grant program, which will provide school districts with the ability to have the infrastructure that will allow them to do a better job of preparing items on site. In addition, we have worked with the new law to provide some flexibilities for wheat, sodium, and some of the other aspects of the law, and we'll continue to do that when it's appropriate. So I think we are responding, and I think we're responding in an effective way to maintain the benefits of and the important benefits of this program, consistent with the vast majority of school districts across the country who are complying, but recognizing that some may need help, and we're there to provide that help, and some may need flexibility, and we're there to provide flexibility when it's appropriate.
Part of the backdrop of some of the questions, especially about commodities and subsidies and such, come from the backdrop of something USDA will be reporting on the next couple of weeks, which is farm income in the country. Obviously, we can't predict the number right now, but it's fairly clear from everyone's comments that the record boom days are behind us right now, especially in the crop sector. I'm wondering if you could comment, and maybe this may be drawing on your experience as governor of Iowa as well as Secretary of Agriculture, what happens to a rural economy when farm income goes down, and what is the appropriate government response to such a situation?
First of all, I think we have to be a bit careful about taking a look at the numbers that are going to come out and suggest from that we're in a situation akin to what occurred in the 1980s, simply for one reason, that we didn't have in 2014 payments under any kind of commodity safety net program. We did have a fairly significant amount of payments made under the livestock disaster program, which obviously have to be factored into it. This year we will have those payments. So it will be interesting to see. This is a very much different situation than occurred when I was a mayor, when I was a state senator, even when I was a governor, for several reasons. One, prices are not as low as they were during that period of time. I remember when I was governor, my first 6 months, hog prices were $9. We're not faced with that kind of circumstance. In fact, we're faced with some pretty decent numbers on the protein side. Secondly, we weren't as aggressive in terms of exports as we are today. And I think the export market is, get Trade Promotion Authority, we get a TPP agreement, well, we begin to do a little better business with Cuba. There's unlimited opportunity there. Third, the debt to asset ratio is significantly different than it was. Farmers used the good times, the really, really, really good times, to pay down debt and to purchase equipment, pay cash for it. And so you don't quite see the leverage that you saw in those days when times were very, very tough. So I think it's a much different circumstance. in terms of the rural economy today, again, is much more diverse and not as dependent upon solely agriculture as it once was. And that's why it's important to note the continued investments in the bioeconomy and in local and regional food systems and food hubs and manufacturing. We're seeing a return of those opportunities. So it helps to balance it out just a bit. Unemployment's coming down in rural areas finally, which is good. So that would suggest that there's a lot of, there is more economic activity. So I think it's a much different circumstance, Alan, than it was. And it, to me, it's not, it's just not comparable. Some individuals will have difficulty, and that's why we will work with those individuals if they are borrowing from us to work through their difficulties. We'll work with banks, and to the extent we've guaranteed a loan, to work with folks to make sure that we try to keep folks on the land as best we can. I think a bigger problem is not so much what you've identified. The bigger problem, from my perspective, is that we've got an aging farm population. We need to continue to encourage young people to get in this business, and we have ownership of land that is free and clear, owned by non-farmers. Which is why I've asked the farm credit folks and the Beginning Farmer and Rancher Development Program or the Advisory Council to work on land tenure issues to see whether or not there's anything we ought to be doing that we're not doing today or more of what we should be doing to ensure access to land for younger and beginning farmers. That, to me, is a much more critical issue. And then I'd say the second critical issue is need for there to continue to be a dialogue and a conversation with the rest of America about American agriculture, what it is and what it isn't, and what it's doing in terms of production processes and methods. It's why we continue to harp on coexistence, why we continue to focus on record involvement and conservation. So I think it's a different situation. Not to say there aren't risks and aren't challenges, but I don't think today it's that we got to worry about a lot of farm sales. I think we have to worry about where the next generation is going to come from, and we have to worry about whether or not the rest of America fully understands and appreciates what they've got in American agriculture.
We're at time. We're actually a little bit over, unfortunately. And we've got to get through.
There's not another question.
You think Congress will approve your proposed cuts in crop insurance? Give us some odds.
You know, Bill, I think Congress is very committed, many members of Congress on both sides of the aisle and both chambers were concerned about net savings from the Farm Bill, and they created this box that we now find ourselves in. There are going to be a lot of conversations and discussions about how those savings can be maintained. Crop insurance needs to be obviously part of it. And time will tell. But I think it is important to put a variety of ideas on the table. And it's one of the reasons why I think the President has suggested that Congress needs to take a real hard look at sequester and its impact. Because that's created a box. And if you really want to stay in that box, that's very difficult choices you have to make, and choices that a lot of folks in Congress aren't really interested in making. That's cuts, for example.